This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. It's been a challenging winter for many Vermonters, and those difficulties extend beyond the weather. For lawmakers and the executive office in Montpelier, the struggle is always to try to find a balance, offering assistance for needy Vermonters, keeping general services running. Just one example, V-Trans is almost through the money it budgeted for snow removal. And on the other side of the same coin, relieving the pressure residents feel from taxes of all sorts. And now, with a $112 million budget shortfall, those calculations have gotten even more difficult. There's a lot to talk about, and we're going to try to get to much of it this hour with Governor Peter Shumlin. Governor Shumlin, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jane.
More news this morning. A high-tech manufacturer in Bennington is closing its doors. Plasan North America employs about 70 people making ballistic armor equipment, things like mine-resistant vehicles. The Bennington County Industrial Corporation confirmed to VPR this morning that those employees are going to be laid off. Governor Shumlin, your Department of Labor was among the first to learn that this was coming. What does it actually mean for Bennington?
Well, it's a huge loss to the 62 employees at Plasan. As you know, it's been a slow unraveling. About a year ago, they moved a part of the operation. I think, first of all, my heart goes out to the families and the folks who lost their jobs. That's a very skilled workforce, really hardworking folks. What Plasan said was that, you know, this is a result of the, and we're seeing this across the country and frankly in Vermont, but because of the sequester and therefore the uncertainty of military funding or the lack of military funding, they were doing military work. This is absolutely related to Pentagon budgets and budget cuts, and this is one of the casualties. So it's a real shame. Having said that, we are going to be working very aggressively. My Secretary of Labor, Annie Noonan, I just met with her. We're going to have boots on the ground. Plasan's going to be working with us. The only good news is that as you move around Vermont, we've got lots of employers who say their biggest challenge is finding enough employees to do the work. Mack Molding is hiring. They're really looking for skilled labor. We've got folks up in, you know, across Bennington County, Rutland County, GE is hiring. The point is we really want to match the skills, their skilled workforce, the 62 folks that are really hurting right now with a new opportunity, and we will.
Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott just put out a press release saying, you know, we really shouldn't blame anyone but ourselves at this point, that it's easy to blame market forces, and certainly they're a big cause of this, the sequestration as well as just the atmosphere nationally and internationally. But it certainly doesn't reflect well for Vermont when we see businesses close their doors, especially when the whole message is trying to attract more business, attract more jobs. To see a plant like this close its doors, especially in southern Vermont, which is already feeling pretty hurt by other closures, and considering Vermont Yankee, how do we deal with this in Vermont when it feels like we're seeing closures rather than openings?
Well, obviously, we're going to work really hard with the 62 employees to find them jobs, and it's a huge loss for all of us. Having said that, though, I mean, you know, you can decide whether you want to constantly talk about Vermont as a, you know, a wasteland where there's no jobs, no economic opportunity, and everything's doom and gloom, and frankly, use bad news for political gain, or you can look at the facts. And the facts are that we have a relatively low unemployment rate in this state, that we have a lot of employers who tell me every single day, if we could find more skilled workers, we'd be growing jobs, we'd be expanding. So I actually think our biggest problem in Vermont right now is not that we don't have the job openings, it's that we don't have the workforce to do the jobs. And that's really what we should be focusing on right now. And we're doing, you know, we're making some real progress. And it's true across the state that if we could do better at, and this is a national problem too, but at moving first-generation kids beyond high school so they have the skills to run the machines, to do the manufacturing equipment, to run the computerized technology, we'd be in much better shape. So, you know, I think for all of us, you know, these job losses, whenever you have them, are always sobering. We should take them all seriously. But let's remember that on average, we've got a good story to tell. We've got more work to do. But Vermont's a great place to work, to live, to do business. And, you know, let's continue the good progress we're making.
When you say some people focus on the negative for political gain, is that a jab at Dave Sunderland, chair of the Vermont Republican Party? Because he's been putting out emails in the last week or so pointing out what he sees as evidence of bad parts of the economy that he thinks you're sort of glossing over. Just this morning, he said, looking at unemployment numbers, he says in December 2013, there were 14,850 Vermonters listed as unemployed. At the end of 2014, there were 100 more unemployed Vermonters. And he says that you're sort of glossing over part of the picture.
You know, that's his job. He's the minority party. And what minority parties do is try to claim that everything that the majority party is doing, and when they're, you know, you go back and look at what happened when his governor was in, you know.
He had a recession, he could.
Well, you just said, Phil Scott just said we can't, blame external sources, you know. So all I'm saying is, you know, let's compare apples and apples. If we look at apples and apples, we've grown 11,000 jobs since I've been governor. Under the Republican governor, the last, the previous 8 years to that, we lost thousands of jobs. Under the past governor, they watched revenues go down every single year. Since I've been governor, we've seen revenues go up by almost $300 million. Our unemployment rate is a lot lower than when I took office, and we're making real progress. Now, does that mean that there's not more work to do? Of course there is. So my point to Republicans, Democrats, Independents, and Progressives is our job is to work together to solve the real problems that are holding back Vermonters' incomes. And this is, again, a national trend, but Vermonters, middle class, is hurting more. You know, they're working harder. They're playing by the rules. They're often working 2-3 jobs. Their bills are coming in faster than they can pay them. This is a national trend that folks at the top are doing very, very well. Everybody else in the middle class is continuing to see stagnation. Low-income Americans and Vermonters are doing worse than they were before the recession. So that's why the initiatives that I've put forward to, first of all, balance our budget in a responsible way, go back to a responsible spending trend, but then take on school spending and get it under control so that property taxes aren't gobbling up Vermonters' incomes faster than they can earn the money. Getting health care costs under control so that health care spending isn't gobbling up our incomes faster than we can earn the money and hurting businesses who are trying to keep up with those rising health care costs. Making sure that we've got early child education to higher education, the best education we can possibly have to train the workers that I just talked about that the employers need, have job openings for, but need the right training to do those jobs. And to make sure that we clean up our dirty lake, keep our environment and our quality of life fantastic so that we continue to be the best place, the best state to live, to work, and to raise a family. That's the agenda. That's what I work on every single day. So to suggest that we're not sitting there focusing on jobs, affordability, you know, this is just happy talk.
Well, you actually promoted all of the things that we want to talk about in this hour.
Right.
We're going to talk about lake cleanup. We want to talk about health care, shifting costs, the governor's proposal for that, where he's encountering some opposition. And listeners, if you have questions about any of the things that we just have mentioned, you can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post your comments and questions on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Let's go to Al calling in from West Berkshire. Hi, Al. Go ahead.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I'm a legally blind Vietnam-era veteran, and as a veteran, I'm dependent on volunteer transportation provided through Green Mountain Transit in Franklin County, Vermont.
Yeah.
Our trips, because of cuts, have been cut back to 3 per month, and that includes medical trips. It's putting our lives at risk. We have been paying into the system because we believe that there's a social contract. And we are finding that Vermont is not honoring that contract right now. So I would like to ask the governor, now that you know what's at stake, will you, as our governor, restore these critical services, or will you continue to take from the blind, elderly, and disabled?
Well, thanks, Al, first of all, for your service in Vietnam. And I would ask you to call my office. I'm not familiar with the cuts that are affecting your public transit right now, but I can tell you that under my governorship, we've increased the dollars to public transit, not reduced them. We've built out and improved our rail infrastructure. And we've just passed the two biggest, implemented the two biggest transportation budgets in the history of the state, which have meant that we're actually, you know, this is a well-kept secret, but not only are we expanding public transit, but we also have moved, when I became governor, 32% of our roads were in poor condition. In other words, you shouldn't travel on them, or the potholes will get you, and you know about this in the kingdom. We now have that number down to 12%. We've cut in half the number of deteriorating roads and bridges that we shouldn't be traveling on, and we're continuing to make progress. But public transit is incredibly important to me. Call my office. I don't quite understand why your trips have been cut back.
We got a note from Karen in Orange who says, I work for the state of Vermont and make about $17 an hour with a bachelor's degree. I'm a single parent and the only income to support my family. I frequently go to work at 2:30 a.m. to work overtime to make ends meet. So far, I cannot find a sitter who I can afford who opens at 6 a.m. or earlier just for my regular shift. Right now, I have a friend who's stepped in to help out. However, this is not a permanent assistance. I receive about $14 a month in food stamps. Basically, my income is just over the limit to receive much aid. How can you, with a clear conscience, cut my wages while people in administration who work great hours for sitters from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. will have the added luxury of keeping their full wages? Governor Shumlin, I've lost faith in you.
Well, listen, we've got a $100 million budget gap, and I'm very sympathetic to Karen's situation. Let's start by saying any cuts that we are able to make in labor savings for Vermont will apply to all employees, me too. So if Karen thinks that I'm not going to take a cut too, guess again, I have in the last budgets, and we all will.
There's a $10 million payroll adjustment that you'd like to see, a reduction in payroll by $10 million. But what are the details of that?
So as you know, we've got a $112 million roughly budget challenge to fix. And it's got to be sustainable. And, you know, I've been governor now for, this is my fifth budget. In every one of them, I've had to balance a budget that was a deficit budget, that had we not corrected the problems, we wouldn't have balanced the budget. And that's one thing I'm expected to do as governor. Having said that, there is no way to solve our budget challenges without asking our hardworking state employees to contribute something too. So we have said to the state employees, listen, come back. Talk to us. Let's figure out a smart way to do this. We've got to get at least $10 million of savings towards our $112 million challenge. And I'm doing this in a balanced way. You know, I've really got three areas that I'm going after. One is finding efficiencies in state government, things that we are not doing as well as we should and not spending taxpayer money as well as we should be. That's $15.5 million worth of efficiencies. Then we've got cuts. And Karen's happens to be in one of the group of folks where they were going to make some modest cuts. Now, I should say we're not going to cut her. We're not going to reduce her pay or anyone else's pay. You just won't see the increase that you might have gotten otherwise. So everyone's going to have to skin in a game. And obviously, we can't balance this budget without some help from the state employees. It's a huge part of our budget. We've got over 7,000 employees, and we've got to deal with it.
And you're hearing from many of them now who are worried about these cuts or concerned that about what it might mean for them.
Sure, but I just want to, you know, let's recite history here for a second. When things were really tough in the Douglas administration, they actually took pay cuts for 2 years. I restored those cuts. One of the first things I did when I came back on. They saw a huge reduction in the number of folks working, which shifted it to temporary employees that I found as temps. They were costing us more than if we kept the employees. So, and they didn't have any benefits. So we brought a lot of those people back on. So, you know, as governor, I've given them, as I should, it's a hardworking state workforce, and I've made sure that we've taken care of them. Now we've got a real problem we need some help with, and it's time for them to come help take care of us.
We got a note from Michael who says, will the governor be asking the Vermont State Troopers to give back some of the 2.5% raise he just awarded them in contract negotiations? Why is he fixated on state employees and no one else? Aren't we all in this together? Why won't he, for example, ask the ski resorts to renegotiate their leases? But he doesn't hesitate to ask employees to renegotiate. Why the double standard?
There's no double standard. We'll be asking the state police to do exactly what we're asking the state employees to do. I should point out that the state police increase is exactly the same as the state employee contract. So they're mirrored. And the only difference, I'll be candid with you, is that the state police have said, we'll come to the table and try to work this out with you, Governor. The state employees still haven't answered.
On the security issue and policing issue, one of the things that you have proposed in your budget in order to cut costs is to close a couple of the emergency dispatch centers. We got a lot of questions from people who are worried about that. Why is that necessary, and why is that actually going? It may save money, but how can you guarantee that it's not going to harm safety by closing two of the four centers?
So what I've asked my team to do is look at the places where government can actually be more efficient with taxpayer dollars. We can't just turn to taxpayers every time we have budget challenges and say, you know what, just, you know, give us some more money. We're going to raise your taxes. We know you've got all kinds of money in your pockets. I mean, Vermonters are saying to us, listen, things are tough. We know the economy is getting better. We're actually starting to see some hope, but we're not feeling it in our checks yet. So we can't turn to Vermonters and say, hey, we got a $112 million budget gap. We're going after you. So what I've got to do as governor, and I'm a business person, I do this in my businesses frequently, is say, hey, where are things that we're not doing efficiently? What could we do better? In terms of the PSAPs, technology is allowing us to do the work that we did differently, had to do differently pre-technology. And everybody knows this. In fact, the head of the FCC has suggested that every state should move to one central PSAP instead of the many that we have in Vermont right now. So my commissioner and public safety team say, listen, we can actually consolidate it down to two and provide the same services, if not improved services, still serve Vermonters well. So that's an area where I can save $1.7 million every single year going forward. Now, the folks who are upset about it, you can't blame them. They're going to lose their jobs. But you cannot find efficiencies in state government without having some job loss. And so, you know, I got to make the tough decisions. What I'm trying to do is do what I was hired to do. Protect the taxpayers, balance the budget, be responsible.
On that note, Anna says, it seems like responders and the actual dispatchers that deal with this on a daily basis and are the experts on this are saying that it will affect public safety.
Well, all I can say is whenever you come out with suggestions for efficiencies in state government, there's always folks who think that you can't do the job better than you're doing it. What I'm saying as governor is my team is advising me that this is an area where we can do this responsibly, protect public safety, and save taxpayer money. You know, there's a lot of controversy. You're hearing from the, you know, every time you have a proposal to be more efficient in state government, there's going to be folks fighting back to keep things. Change is hard, but we've got to change. We can't just simply turn to taxpayers and say, we want your change. Give us more of it. We've got to be more efficient.
Let's go to Bradley, who's calling in from Waterbury Center. Hi, Bradley. Go ahead.
I was a selectman for 20 years, and we always had a budget set up where we had a quarterly report, and we knew what we were spending at each quarter, so we didn't end up with a huge deficit. And it looks like you don't have a quarterly report so that you know what kind of trouble you're getting into.
Well, we actually do, Bradley. I mean, we have a very similar system. It's a little different because different entities, but we, with the legislature, have a process where we sit down with our economists, theirs and ours, and we basically do a projection for what we think revenues are going to be, as well as a correction should they be going up or down. And we're actually pretty good at that. Let me tell you what we got wrong. And it's not just Vermont. Governor Hassan's going through this in New Hampshire. Most of the Northeast governors aren't. Frankly, the governors that rely on oil are really going through this. The economists coming out of the recession nationally assume that we're going to see about a 5% growth rate as a nation coming out of the recession. For whatever reason, this recession's been different. And now they all agree, as of about 6 months ago, that it's going to be a 3% growth rate going forward. So that's a huge difference for Vermont. Now, we were planning on 5% growth. We've got 3% growth, so we've got to match those two numbers. So one of the things that some of my friends don't get is, even if you raise taxes on Vermonters this year and did it all that way, which would be terrible for our economy, and I'm against it, but let's just say we did, you'd be back here next year because you'd still have a 5% growth rate matched with a 3% revenue coming through the door. So we've got to right-size this, and it's not difficult. I mean, it's difficult, but this is not hard to do. Business folks do this all the time. I have to do it in my business. It's an adjustment. But my budget that I submitted is a 1.9% increase over the budget that passed last year. In other words, before we started doing rescissions. And, you know, that'll get us back on a more responsible fiscal track that actually matches the current projections of growth with what's really going to come through the door.
You know, I think it may be hard for some Vermonters to trust that current projections are accurate given what we've seen over the last several years. And we've got a couple of emails on this point. Louise says, what kind of repercussions are there for the advisors and for the governor who so glaringly failed in their budget projections? To be that far off seems, frankly, incredible, bordering on negligent. And Joseph says, you know, I'm assuming they originally forecasted a 5% growth rate, as Governor, you just mentioned, to match the 5% state budget increase when the budget was initially passed. Joseph says, a 2% difference in projections is a significant miss. There's the appearance to me that the present state economists juggle the books to fit your agenda. Why not replace the present state economists with a new staff of politically unbiased number crunchers?
Well, I mean, if that were true, we would. So, you know, both of those suggestions are kind of ridiculous. Listen, we all understand that in tough fiscal time, that when you're managing a budget, whether it's for business or for government, There's going to be times where you overestimate. There's going to be times where you underestimate. And I just explained why myself and many other governors find themselves in this situation. And what we do when we get into this situation is do what we're doing, make
but
the tough choices.
But it seems like every year we have a budget gap that we need to close, and every half year we have a budget gap. So why not
I can remember
under-promise, over-deliver?
Well, I can remember the years where it was just the opposite. What we actually try to do is be accurate. And our economists are pretty good at being accurate. And, you know, this for this particular estimate of this recovery, this is a national problem. This has been a slower recovery than we've ever seen in what is a recovery. And we are doing better. Don't forget, my government right now is taking in $300 million more than when I took office. So it's not that the revenues aren't coming in. It's that, like many other governors across the country and, frankly, a lot of business people, we all overestimated the robustness of the recovery. It's slower. Hopefully it'll last longer than recoveries usually do.
We're talking today with Governor Peter Shumlin. He's with us this full hour, taking your calls, answering your questions. If you have one, you can call 1-800-639-2211 or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Just ahead, we're going to talk about vaccination rules, why Governor Shumlin says Vermont should leave the philosophical exemption in place. So again, questions on that or other topics are welcome. Go to vpr.net and click on Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. My guest all this hour is Governor Peter Shumlin. Before the break, we were talking about the difficult decisions about how to close a more than $100 million budget gap. Some of those decisions may involve cutting programs or even jobs. I know some of you have questions about specific programs that might be targeted, and we'll get to a few of those. We're also going to look now at some of the governor's positions on issues relating to health care. And if you want to chime in on that part of the discussion, you can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. A lot of people wanting to get in. Those phone lines are pretty busy. You can also post your comments and questions on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Governor Shumlin, you support keeping the philosophical exemption in place for parents who want to opt out of some or of all of the vaccinations that are required for Vermont children who want to attend school. There's a bill moving through the legislature that would remove that exemption, possibly also remove the religious exemption, and leave in place the medical exemption, which is accompanied by a doctor's note. Charlotte in Worcester says, thank you for protecting parents' choice. How do you explain the hysteria over those who are unvaccinated when the numbers are extremely low? For example, fewer than 1% of Vermont school children use the philosophical exemption to opt out of the MMR, and being unvaccinated does not give you the measles. Thoughts on what Charlotte's saying?
You know, this is what I feel about what Charlotte's saying. You ought to vaccinate your kids. They work. And my position has always been that we should look at the science. And what the science says is if you vaccinate your kids, you're likely to keep them from getting diseases that killed their grandparents or their relatives otherwise would have been with us. So, I mean, let's just use common sense. Vaccinate your kids. Having said that, I want to reframe the debate a little bit here. Vermont has always had this philosophical exemption from as long as I can remember. I think it goes back to the 1970s. So this is not new legislation. This is not a new debate. Other governors like me have tried very hard to convince Vermonters to vaccinate their kids. So, you know, I think, let's remember that we went through this debate 2 years ago, that I got sent a bill that strengthened, that made it more difficult for folks to opt out of vaccinating, that we had them have to sit down with their physician, hear the facts, learn about it. And, my own view is that we should see how that works going forward and hope that people vaccinate their kids. Now, the legislature is going to debate this. Let's be honest about this. A lot of the debate is coming from the folks who lost the debate last time, just 2 years ago. When I'm out there talking to Vermonters, you know, what they're saying to me is, my school property taxes are too high. You're spending money on schools faster than I can make it. My health care costs and premiums on insurance are going up faster than I can pay for them. You know, I'm really concerned, like the mom just called in, about how we get good child care for our kids. You know, they're saying to me, we got a lake that's got blue-green algae in it. It's not only can you not swim in it, but it stinks so bad in some portions of the lake in the summertime that we don't even want to be in our camps or our houses. I mean, we got some real problems to solve, and I'm just not sure that, not suggesting this isn't a real problem, but I'm just not sure that we're going to make great gains in this conversation from the one that we had 24 months ago.
On this note, let's go to Courtney, who's calling in from Essex. Hi, Courtney, go ahead.
Hi, Jane. Hi, Governor Shumlin. have a child who can't receive several of the vaccinations, the childhood immunizations, because of medical complications. And I feel that it's, yes, it's up to parents whether we vaccinate our children or not. But if you're taking advantage of a public service like our public schools, and there should be no philosophical exemption because we're providing a safe space for all of our children. Just like we say when you're on the road, you must, the law is that you must be seat belted or in a proper child seat. And I feel like if they're sending, if parents are sending their kids to a public school where everyone should be expected to have a safe place for their kids, then they should have to vaccinate their kids, which science has proven is safe.
Courtney, thanks for your point. I appreciate hearing from you. Governor Shumlin, on this legislation, if it goes through, if the lawmakers who are trying to eliminate the philosophical exemption are successful, will you veto that bill?
You know, I took some great advice from every former governor that's still alive that I can speak with. And they said, you know, never talk about whether you're going to sign or veto a bill till you see it. Because you don't know what's in it. You don't know what it'll look like. And so I followed that good advice. But having said that, we're on the same page here. You ought to vaccinate your kids. I think we sometimes forget in this conversation that if you compare Vermont to other states, you know, we're doing okay. So let's do a better job of trying to convince people of the science, and let's focus on the challenges that are really holding Vermonters back, and I can tell you what they are. School spending, education, Dirty Lake, moving to renewable energy and getting off our addiction to oil, balancing a tough budget.
We're talking to Governor Peter Shumlin. If you have a question for him, if you have an issue that's really important to you that you want to get his position on, our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can also post your questions at vpr.net. Let's go to Jason, who's calling in from Middlebury. Hi, Jason. Go ahead.
Hi there. I'm a 31-year-old carpenter, and although I support single-payer health care, I understand the governor's perspective that funding of single-payer at this time was too big a burden on Vermonters. So given that the costs of the Vermont gas pipeline have nearly doubled, and that International Paper pulling out of their contract means an additional cost shift to ratepayers, at what point do you consider that the pipeline project has become too big a burden on Vermont ratepayers?
Well, it's a good question, Jason, and the answer is at the point that it doesn't make any economic sense. And, you know, that really is important to me. I know there's a lot of debate about whether we should be expanding natural gas for lots of reasons. My position, as you know, has been that I just want to give folks in Addison and Rutland County the same choice on energy that the folks in Chittenden County and Franklin County have enjoyed for years, in the hope that it'll move people from dirtier oil to a cleaner source of energy and give them some economic opportunity they might not have otherwise had. Having said that, it makes no sense if it's not affordable, if it doesn't actually give them a choice that makes economic sense. So what I've done is asked way back last summer, my public service department asked the public service board to reexamine all of the assumptions on that pipeline based upon the fact that we keep getting different numbers. And they're doing that. I'm not going to comment too much on it beyond that because it's a pending case before the board. It's a quasi-judicial body. I think they do a great job over there, and I'm sure they'll make the right decision. But they are looking out. My department is saying to them, listen, we only want to do this. We only want to give Vermonters this choice if it's going to put dollars in their pockets.
So are you saying now that your support for phase one of the pipeline is suspended? Are you still supportive of that project, or are you really waiting to see what the PSB says?
I've said what I've always said. I support it as long as it makes economic sense for Vermonters. It'll put money in their pocketbooks and move them off of dirtier oil.
We got a note from Ron who just wants to know how expensive would this have to be before you'd withdraw your support?
Well, I'm not an energy analyst, and that's why it's so good that we have the system we do where the experts on the board actually get to the numbers and figure that out. And, you know, as we know, energy costs are just incredibly hard to predict. I mean, you were just giving me a hard time on the budget. Imagine what we would say to the oil execs and all the people who assumed that we were going to have $100 a barrel oil on up. And where they are, you know, even 6 months ago, if I'd said to you, hey, we're going to have $40, $50 boiler on oil, you'd have thought I was crazy. So here's the long and short of it. Energy markets change drastically. What the board has to do is look at all the assumptions about the future and make the judgment, and they will do that.
You've proposed a 0.7% payroll tax to help address the cost shift in how medical procedures are paid for. There's a lot of debate and some pretty strong opposition to that in Montpelier in the State House. Do you see any other creative solutions coming out of the State House that you would support for addressing the cost shift?
I'd support anything that addresses the cost shift that makes sense. And let's just talk about the problem, because we see the cost shift, we talk in these limbo, in these lingo terms, and most people don't understand what we're talking about. So plain English, right now, if you are a primary care doc or a nurse or a chiropractor or whatever, and you actually have an insured client, and you help someone get better who's on Medicaid, you get paid anywhere between 40 and 60 cents on a dollar for that work. What it means for Vermonters is that we've cut our insured rate in half because of the Affordable Care Act. So literally, we've seen our insured rate go down to about 3%. The Affordable Care Act worked. We did that by putting a lot more people on Medicaid, which was the intent of the president when they passed the Affordable Care Act. What it means is that our providers now have even more people coming through the door paying them 40 to 60 cents on a dollar. So then what really happens with that money? Three things happen. Number one, the person who gets the insurance card finally has insurance. They're all excited, and they call up, and they start looking for someone to take care of them. And the first person, the question that the person at the desk has to ask is, who's your carrier? Now, they don't really care whether you're Blue Cross, Blue Shield, MVP, or Cigna, because they all pay the same rates. What they're really asking you in code is, are you Medicaid? Because if you're Medicaid, we can't afford to take too many of you. So that's a really broken system. That hurts low-income Vermonters who need care. Second, the providers don't want to be in that position. These people were trained to make us better, not to game insurance rates. So you got the doc or the nurse or the whoever who's sitting there at the other end feeling terrible about their position or having to go out of business if they take too many. Finally, some of that cost is made up by shifting that underpayment to the people who pay for commercial insurance. So the people, businesses, individuals who are buying commercial insurance have this tax shifted to them, or whatever you want to call it, this burden. So what I've said is, let's fix it. And the astounding part of this argument is, we are leaving $100 million on the table that the Fed should be giving us to solve this problem because we refuse to take it on. And what do I mean by that? My 0.7% payroll tax will raise $90 million a year from Vermont businesses. That will draw down $100 million of federal money. So we've got a $190 million pool. The beauty of my particular proposal is that we can get it back to the people who pay it. Now, have you heard from that? Heard that from government before? Really, this is how it'll work. If you pay a payroll tax and you buy insurance, so you're someone who's buying insurance for your employees or for yourself, we will get through the Green Mountain Healthcare Board and our providers a 5% reduction in what your premiums would have otherwise been. So obviously it's an average. Some businesses won't get it all back. Others will get more than they paid back. But on average, we'll get the $90 million back to the Vermont businesses. Now people say, well, Governor, how do we know that? I'm willing to put in law, I'm so sure that this will work, that if it doesn't work, we'll have an annual performance assessment done by the Green Mountain Healthcare Board. And if it doesn't work, it sunsets. It's gone. So unlike other taxes where government says, we've got such an important public need that we're going to ask you to pay income, sales, rooms and meals, whatever it is, on this one we're saying, we've got such an important problem to fix that we're going to ask you to pay the tax and we're going to send it back to you on average. It just makes good common sense.
We're talking to Governor Peter Shumlin. He's talking now about a payroll tax proposal that he's put out there, debate going on in Montpelier about that. Also debate in Montpelier over more restrictions on gun purchases. We'll talk a little bit about that. And more questions from you. If you have a question for Governor Shumlin, you can post it on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net or call 1-800-639-2211. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today we're talking with Governor Peter Shumlin about some of the issues that are at the top of his agenda and at the top of yours. If you have a question, you can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. We've discussed the governor's position on required immunizations, some proposals on how to close the budget gap, and on why he still believes a payroll tax is the best way to start addressing the cost shift in health care payments. And Governor, before we move on, you wanted to make one brief...
Just one point. Yeah. Obviously, the point I just made, it doesn't do you any good to take $90 million from business and then send it back to them, which is what we're going to do. We're going to get $100 million in federal funds. And with that, we're going to take care of all kinds of problems we have in our healthcare system. The blueprint for health providers haven't seen a raise since it started. Our home health care workers are working for wages that haven't seen adequate reimbursement. So what we're going to do is take some of that money, the federal money that we've been drawing down, and help raise the amount that we're paying in Medicaid to the Medicare rate. So Medicare reimburses about 80 cents of the dollar. This will take some 40, 60 to 80. It will help solve the problem for our providers and keep our primary care providers from going out of business.
Let's go to Mark, who's calling in from Berkshire. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Governor, just had a couple quick points to go over. Vermont's the second highest tax state in the nation. My education tax has gone up 300%, quadrupled since I've lived in my home. I want to know what you're going to do about it.
Yeah, Mark, can I ask you a question before I lose you? Are you income sensitized, or do you pay the whole bill?
I am income sensitized as of last year, but I won't be this year because I actually upgraded my job.
Congratulations. So, we love it. Okay. So listen, because whenever we talk about this, and I hear Vermonters, we remember that 60-70% of Vermonters, and Mark was in this group until he got the raise and better job. But, you know, up to $90,000 a year, you get some break on your property taxes. When you cite the national statistics, they don't tend to measure that. So be wary of those national statistics, because we are the state that's taken, the only state that's taken the property tax and turned it into an income tax. In other words, if you make, you know, many Vermonters don't actually residents on their house and 2 acres pay the entire bill because we tried to make it fair. Having said that, we're spending too much.
Well, and if you are income sensitized, that doesn't mean that you don't see your bill increase
exactly
as your property taxes increase.
You got it. Right. So as our spending goes up, we've all got to raise more money. So let's talk about the problem that Mark's really asking about. What are you doing about the fact we've got a school spending problem? I've put together a pretty ambitious proposal that tries to solve the problem. Now, I'm going to try to talk about the problem in plain English, because just like healthcare, it's complicated. But this one is just, you know, the numbers matter. Just a few years ago, we had 103,000 students we were educating in our schools. Today, we have 79,600, or as of last year, 79,600. So think about that. That's 20% loss, 23,000 students gone from our public schools. Our staff student teacher ratios haven't reduced the number of people that we're paying, just like state government. So we've got a 4.7-1 staff student ratio. And our school class size in many of our rural communities continues to go down. Now, that's just the facts. Here's the bad news. For people like Mark up in, you know, a small rural community where he lives, those numbers are going to get worse. All the projections say that going forward, we're going to lose more kids in small rural communities. And like the rest of America, our urban areas, Burlington and others, will continue to see increases. So you can draw a map across Vermont. Now, Mark's talking about the frustration he feels trying to pay his property taxes. Here's the other real concern we should have in addition to the rising cost. We're hurting our kids. All the evidence suggests that if you have schools that get too small, this isn't not talking about small schools here, compared to the rest of the nation, we've got micro schools. It's the only way to describe them, where you're literally, 20% of our elementary school classrooms in Vermont have 2 to 9 kids in them. Half of our schools have lost half of their kids, and that trend's going to continue. So this is what we're doing. We're going to change the formula to take out the things that are hurting our kids' educational opportunity and hurting people like Mark trying to pay their property taxes. Get rid of the incentives in Act 68 that reward this trend. Second, partner with local communities to give them the data going forward, which the state of Vermont has never done a good job of saying, listen, this is where you are now. Here's the bad news, Mark. Right now, your property tax, if you keep just doing what you're doing, it's a bargain basement sale after the holidays compared to what they're going to be in 5 years or 10 years if you keep doing what you're doing. And finally, by that partnership, giving them the data, I believe that local communities will sit down and say, how can we make the changes necessary to ensure that we don't have 2 to 9 kids in our classes, that we don't in next year have 4 kids in the class, and that it continues to get worse. We're also giving incentives to communities that make the consolidation choices that have a better delivery system for better outcomes for less money, and we've got to do it. So we've got our ideas. The legislature's going to come out with theirs. We will come out of this session with a bill that helps to dig out of a problem that it took us a long time to dig into. So we didn't get here overnight. We won't get out overnight. But I'm really encouraged by the conversation going on with my administration, with the legislature, with communities across Vermont. We cannot continue to do business the way we're doing it. We're spending money more per pupil than any state in the nation. We've got declining enrollment. We've got to figure out a better way to deliver quality education for a better price.
This is a big topic, and actually it's the focus of tomorrow's Vermont Edition. So I want to let Mark and others who are concerned about this know that we're going to talk about property taxes. We're going to talk about education funding tomorrow on the program. So make sure that you stay tuned for that. We just have the governor for a couple more minutes, so let's make sure we get in a couple of other questions. Stephen's on the line with us from Burlington. Go right ahead, Stephen.
Hi. So it's interesting to me that this morning we heard on the news that the legislature decided to try to beef up its security, look at what's wrong. And also in the news this morning, we heard from President Obama saying that the solution to ISIS insurgencies and the other terrorist organizations is not to suppress them, but to try to solve the root problems. And so I would like to ask the governor to reflect with us about what it would look like and how it would affect our democracy if security was actually enhanced to the degree that the kind of disruptive protest that occurred on the first day of the legislature was actually put in place.
I think what Stephen's referring to here is some disruptions at the State House on the day of your inauguration, Governor Shumlin. There were a lot of protesters who actually crowded at the chamber and made it difficult for senators to get through into the House chamber, made it a little difficult for you to get through. You had to exit out the back side rather than the front side. And in the debate over who should become the next sergeant at arms, an election that was held this morning at the State House, that issue of security at the State House became an issue of discussion. And so one of the questions has been, does there need to be increased security at the State House? In this morning's election, Francis Brooks was taken out of the position that he's held for quite a while, and the legislature elected Janet Miller, the new sergeant at arms. But what about Stephen's point about increasing or enhancing security at the State House? Do you think it needs to be done?
You know, I think that we have, you know, sometimes I think that we take problems and make them bigger than they need to be. And on this one, listen, I felt pretty privileged to be elected governor for a third term. It's the most extraordinary job that anyone could ever have. We're trying to make great change for Vermont. And, you know, I gave my inaugural address, and I'd wished that some of the folks that were speaking hadn't been interrupted. But I think it was more of a problem of respect, frankly, than it was of security. And that's changing in America, and we don't want it to change in Vermont. We also don't want to get Social Security ridden that we don't have the most open legislature and the most open democratic process that you can find anywhere in the 50 states, and that's what we've got in Vermont. So let's not overreact. Let's be thoughtful. I think the most important message that came out of that, as far as I'm concerned, was a conversation about how we express our views, where we make sure that our voice is heard, but ensure that we don't think that our point of view is so important that we drown out other people's voices. And that was really the problem. That's more a conversation about respect than it is about security.
One of the other areas where Vermonters have been trying to get their voices heard at the State House is on proposed gun legislation. You've expressed your support for leaving the gun laws that we have in place and not adding restrictions. A proposal is in the legislature right now to require that private gun sales also include a background check. That you've said you don't support. Do you support the move also included in the bill to add people who have been involuntarily committed to a state mental facility for mental health reasons to the database for people who are prohibited from purchasing guns? The Sportsman's Club told us after the program that we did with them that that's not a move that they thoroughly would fight.
You know, this isn't a new position of mine. I believe that you know, Vermonters deal with firearms with tremendous respect, and that the laws that we have serve us well. And I know that there are people who feel very strongly that I'm wrong about that, but I have not seen evidence in Vermont to change my view. So, you know, again, what I try to focus on isn't so much the issues that divide us. I'm trying to get to the issues that people are really screaming and hollering about for good reason. And they are the things that we've been talking about today. So, you know, I'm always interested in finding ways to increase jobs, increase economic prosperity, find ways to get more money in Vermonters' pockets by making really tough decisions about healthcare, about school spending, about cleaning up our dirty water, about moving to renewables and dealing with the climate change challenge and a whole host of issues. And I just feel on this one that we're often in search in Vermont, and not nationally. If I was the governor of Chicago, you know, and the mayor of Chicago or the mayor of New York, I'd feel differently. But for Vermont, we're sometimes in search of a solution in search of a problem.
Governor Peter Shumlin, thank you very much for spending the hour with us today. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me.
By the way, you can follow all of VPR's political coverage online at vpr.net, including more coverage of Lake Champlain cleanup issues, which we didn't get a chance to talk about today with the governor. Earlier this hour, we touched on the frustration of a lot of taxpayers on property taxes. As I said, that is the focus of tomorrow's show, property taxes and changing the way we fund education. You can add your thoughts by writing to Vermont Edition at vpr.net. And tune in tomorrow at noon. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.